Hey, you heard of Urban Float? Well, if you like to relax and disconnect, then you should check out Urban Float in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, located next to Rosenfeld's Jewish Deli and the new Ocean Atlantic Shopping Center on Route 1 North. Guests of Urban Float get to relax and float in their own flotation pod filled with purified skin temperature water and 1,200 pounds of dissolved Epsom salts. The health benefits are profound. I love it. You can book your first float at urbanfloat.com. Just be sure to select the Rehoboth Beach location and use the code FIRSTTIME at checkout to receive 50% off your first float. Renew, refresh, revive at Urban Float.
This is the Film Effect with Tiff.
Okay, I'll do a damn lot count.
Sir, right now?
Yeah, right now. You're darn tootin'.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Film Effect. This is Tiff, and I have an awesome guest today. I have my lovely wife, Nicole Sachs.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm so great.
You know, this is fun, having you be on the podcast.
It's fun for me because I want to be a guest and not have my own stupid podcast. That's so this is awesome.
Yeah, that is pretty awesome. Okay, so if you guys have been following the Instagram and the Facebook and, you know, the millions of listeners out there who just... I can't tell you.
It's blowing up.
It's big. I can't even sort through the amount of emails I get daily. You guys have so many requests, criticisms.
Compliments.
Oh, yeah. Compliments.
I mean, it's blowing up.
It is blowing up. And if you are very good at listening to my intro, you probably heard that little quote. And so if you did, you might realize that we are going to be talking about two movies today. Bit of a double feature, just like I did last time, and we're going to talk about Fargo, and we're going to talk about
Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs, one of my favorites. So I don't know, Nicole, do you want to talk about your love of movies, and should we get into it?
Yeah,
let's just have chit chat for a minute.
Okay, so I was raised on my parents were pretty serious people. We didn't do a lot of comedies.
Your parents were serious?
They were serious people. They were like intellectual New York Times, 60 Minutes, CNN serious people. And yeah. So when we would go to the movies, and I was an only child, and so when we would go to the movies, we wouldn't go to like the stupid, I don't think I saw like a kid's movie my whole childhood. We would go to the Academy Award contenders.
When you used to love that.
You know what, honestly?
Was it fun?
I did. Well, you love... Well, you just do what you know. And you know, I never went to movies with friends. I don't remember ever sitting in a movie with a friend. I would go, I mean, when I was little. I mean, obviously, when I became a teenager, I did that. But so we would go, like, when I was 8, I went to Gandhi and went to, like, 3 hours, and there was an intermission. You know,
that movie's a tough one.
It's a long movie.
It's really...
We tried to watch that recently.
We really did. We didn't get through it. It was not good.
But, I mean, it's an epic film. But... Yeah, so I mean, I'm attracted to these movies that are these incredibly intense, well done, sort of Academy Award contender type movies, and so the ones that stick with me that I want to watch over and over again tend to be those movies. Yeah. So these are two of those, obviously.
How can you not love these two movies, right?
I mean, for me, I love, yeah. love, love. Yeah.
So what was like the first movie that you remember having like that you actually really enjoyed, or you were kind of like, oh my god, I love movies. This is like,
oh my god, you didn't prep me with the questions.
Sorry,
Let me think. The mm-hmm. first movie. You know, I don't have a lot. Oh, I know.
What?
E.T.
Oh, E.T. Yeah.
I have a crazy E.T. story. You want to tell my E.T.
I do.
Story?
I want to hear all about it. And I also want to know, and I should know this because I hang out with you and go to the movies. I know some things about you, Nicole. No, but I know that, you know, I like to ask people. That's one of my things I'm doing on the show. Yeah, I want to know what your experience, like what your preferences are when you go to the movie theater.
Okay, so let's talk about it. Even though I know you do know this, but similar to one of the guests you've had on the podcast, uh-huh. which is Donna DeKuyper, I like to sit in that area of the movies, at least where we go to the movies most often, which is the Midway. where it's like the first row with the bar in front of it, so you can put your feet on the bar. But it's not the actual first row, because it's only the first row in the second section, because I would hate to sit in the very first row of a movie theater with your neck having to crane all the way up. That would be just not fun for me at all.
That's like my nightmare.
Nightmare. Yeah. It's the worst. And I've done it like once or twice in my life when a movie was sold out and I got there with my friends like in my 20s, and you're like, oh shit, well either we're going to not see it at all, or we're going to sit in the first row, which I think sucks. But I like that first row of the second section where you can put your feet up. And in terms of movie food, we both know that I'm not the biggest eater of movie food, because I've become so boring and lame as an adult.
You're not boring.
I just like to eat healthy
food.
You
sometimes have a pick, though.
If I had a pick.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Mr. Twizzler.
Mr. Twizzler. We might need to explain that.
Maybe, maybe not.
I think you do.
But Twizzlers would be my candy.
Uh-huh.
Either that or, well, see, here's the problem.
What?
Are we going to get deep in my pathology right now?
I mean, I like to get deep.
Okay.
I mean, maybe this is how I can psychoanalyze you.
Right.
It's by doing it through the avenue of talking about film and movies, TV.
Okay. Well, you can psychoanalyze me because
let's do it.
I like Skittles and I like Swedish Fish. No, not Swedish Fish. The Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah.
But I only like the red.
Oh, that's right. And you do. I know that about you.
So that's a problem.
You're already
at the
like primed to be a serious celebrity. I always say that.
Oh, right.
Well, like, yeah, because like, you know, they have the thing with the M&Ms.
Right.
It's like, you know, everyone pick out only the red ones just to put them in a bowl. That's it.
Not even joking. I only like the red. So the problem is getting movie theater candy that's not Twizzlers would require me in the dark to try to parse out the reds.
Well, I mean, maybe
and then
they
once
should
in a while,
create
that like
for you.
Mistakenly, you eat a green, and it's like, oh my god, it's disgusting. So it's a deep problem for me. I'm in therapy about it.
You need to get some, seriously. Yeah. Yeah, but I do think that's like the reason I like to ask it is because it's like the visuals of mm-hmm. your experience.
Yeah.
And I know it was funny talking to Tyrese because he just hates being in a crowd in a theater because of all the people talking.
Yeah.
And the noise of the candy.
Oh,
and
that's interesting.
The moving of the popcorn or whatever can disturb his experience. But I was saying that I actually enjoy all that weird stuff. And I sometimes think it's hilarious when people are having commentary behind me, unless I'm taking the movie real seriously. But I don't know. What do you think about people talking in a theater?
I think it's annoying as hell.
It's annoying. Unless it's us, of course.
We are the worst.
And we're
nobody
so loud.
Nobody sit by us.
Yeah,
nobody.
Like
everyone
it's bad.
See us and just go on the other side of the theater. We're the rudest.
Do you think we're really rude?
I think that we can be very rude.
Hey, you know what? That's what it's all about. You're sitting in the dark. You get to sit there and you can kind of be as rude as you want. And nobody can really tell you, except they
well,
might
they
give
can.
You the shh.
I've been told.
Shh. Or they could give you the eye roll.
I've been given the eye. I've
the
been
eye.
Given the shush.
The shush and the eye.
I've gotten it from mostly old
favorites.
Ladies.
Yeah.
Mostly old ladies really
I
don't
know.
Like me.
They're my favorite, though.
But I want to say something about the popcorn.
Go ahead.
When I decide to commit to popcorn, I eat it like an animal. I eat popcorn with my fist
you
to
eat
my
it
face.
With a vengeance.
I do.
Yeah, well.
I do everything very fast.
I think, well, that I know.
Yeah.
And I'm the opposite, so we're a fun pair, let me tell you.
I know.
Okay.
It work.
Yeah. So I'm just going to, before we get in, we're going to talk about Fargo first. Mm-hmm. However, I would like to give everyone the details because isn't that important
it
at
is.
Some level? Let's
well,
talk about
people,
it. Well,
because some people have never seen it, and then this would be very uninteresting to them if they don't know the details.
And I know Netflix is going to promote me for, they're going to say, yay, Tiffany, tell everyone, actually, this is a lie because you can't find these movies on Netflix. Guess what? Don't listen to me. I don't even know where you find them. Probably
you have to buy them.
You probably
on
have to buy them on
them.
iTunes. Sorry to iTunes. Reach me out. Come out to me. Okay. Fargo, 1996.
A good year.
And it is categorized as a crime drama thriller, not a comedy, which kind of it is for a
sometimes
lot of people.
Sometimes I laugh very hard when I'm watching Fargo.
And we're going to talk about that because that's an interesting part of the way this movie has been received by the audience. Directors Joel Coen and Ethan Coen, both of them also the writers, and of course it stars William H. Macy, Frances McDormand, Steve Buscemi, and a bunch of other people that I'm not going to get into.
But they're all very good.
They are important. Good. Man, they're good.
The little parts in that movie are so important.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. You think?
I think so.
I think so, too. Yeah, like, what's your... Do you have a favorite scene in this movie that like, you remember?
Yes. But I have so many favorite scenes. But one that came to mind, just because we were just talking about the characters that are smaller, is the scene where Frances McDormand is interviewing the two prostitutes were with the murderer guys, the kidnapper guys. And this, they're so... I lived in Minnesota for 3 years. So to me, they're so like kind of homegrown Minnesota.
I know. And I don't want to jump in yet. So continue.
Okay. Well, in any case, just when she's asking them what they look like and they're like, yeah, he was just funny looking. Just, and she's like, oh, how so? And they're just in the regular usual kind of way. I love that scene.
And here's, you know, and I'll bring this up now because I actually made little notes because I'm such a nerd. I had to make notes. I'm not from Minnesota. I think, you know, I saw this movie in Baltimore. I oddly saw this movie. I must have been right finishing up college because 96 is when I graduated at Towson. And I,
you graduated in 95, didn't you?
No, remember?
Oh, I was a year later. Okay, because I graduated in 94.
Because I'm a dummy. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. It took me 20 years. No, but I remember I went to see it in Baltimore and, John Waters was actually in the audience that night and somebody had said that. So it was kind of an exciting premiere. And when I went to the premiere, they gave us a poster and they gave us a ice scraper thing that you use on your car. It was like a plastic thing, like as a memento and, memento. And, it's funny when you get that going into the movie because you're like, what is this movie going to be about? I just got an ice scraper.
Right.
I hadn't seen the movie yet. So it's random. Really strange. Yeah. But I'm also not, I don't know how people talk in that part of the country. And I think for people that saw this movie, there was so much comedy around the way the people were speaking. And I wonder if the people in Wisconsin,
It's Minnesota, North
Dakota. Sorry. And did that piss people off, you know? It did.
Well, my story of Fargo is I was living in New York City when it came out and I saw it in New York.
Okay.
And I freaking loved it. I don't know, something about it just like, I just thought it was so hilarious, but so fascinating and so deep and so such a social commentary. So all those things. But very soon after, I would say within a month after it came out and I could look at the date, but I moved to Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Okay.
To go to grad school. Well, to be with David, my ex-husband.
You wanted to be in the coldest place.
I wanted to be in the coldest fucking place. Am I allowed to say the F word on your podcast?
Yeah, everybody says it. I mean, I don't know how crazy you want to get.
I'm not going to get too bad, but I just said it.
Because, you know, our children might decide.
Our children have heard me say the F word.
True.
But I moved to the coldest place on the planet as far as I was concerned. But I moved there within moments of seeing this movie. And so the trueness, the authenticity of the way the movie is depicted, the way the people are depicted, to me was freaking hilarious because not everyone, and any sort of blanket, you know, statement is wrong. So not everyone in Minneapolis, St. Paul reminded me of people in Fargo in the movie, but so many did that it was killing me every day.
Yeah.
Every day there would be someone who would talk like that or act like that or that kind of Minnesota nice where people are just like very basic and like really just like kind of looking at you and staring at you and smiling at you. And I'm like from New York and I'm like, what the hell is going on
that
here?
That must have been a transition.
It was insane.
Yeah.
The transition.
They must have looked at you with like, what is this person doing here?
They didn't know what was going on in my mind. So they couldn't have known.
No one does.
How
I'm just kidding.
True.
No, I'm just kidding.
My mind was even worse than the way I acted. But I loved living there. So it's nothing against it. It's just saying that there is an authenticity to it that is profound when you've had the experience of being in that space that I don't think many people know.
And it's an interesting choice. Like, obviously, it's not a fictional story. That's one thing I should also mention. So one thing is this movie opens on a little, you know, not a disclaimer, but
like a screen,
just
shares,
credits, just text on the screen, black screen, white words. Telling you that what you're about to see is a completely true story and that they, to the best of their ability, didn't change any of the facts.
Didn't change anything. The only thing that was changed was the names, they said.
Yeah.
That's
so,
it.
So, I mean, you're kind of getting set up for this experience of a story that's like a real story. But then you see these people And they kind of are, I mean, and that was another question I wanted to ask you. And it was, I will tell my listeners, this is really funny because we watched this, we rewatched this together.
Yeah.
And with the understanding that you were going to come on my podcast.
Right.
And I'm like, we can't talk about this movie while we're watching it.
Right.
And we love to talk about movies and TV. I mean, we probably end every night sitting in bed watching something, and it's the most
making ruthless fun of it.
Yeah. And it's the most fun. It's the way we decompress, I think, from our crazy lives of parenting and everything else, to sit and just kind of like get into a show, get into a movie and just talk, you know, talk about it and make fun of it and just like have a good old time. So this was not an easy task to sit with you,
right,
and watch a movie that we both love and have seen and not be able to like say our thoughts out loud,
right.
So I was like, I don't want to hit, we'll talk about it later,
right,
you know, like I'm and I literally was making notes as I was sitting next to you watching it, and it was a little bit tough, but I did think one of the things I wrote down was, do you think because of the way it's either the, you know, the location and the way the people, they're, what do you call that, that language, that kind of,
what you mean, their accent,
thank you,
sure,
I lost my brain, did that, was that kind of, did it create a one-dimensional feel for those people? Or did you, like, you care less about them a little bit, some of them?
Oh, my God, no.
Okay.
Not for me. Not for me. I freaking love it. Okay, so I get what you're asking.
Yeah.
Because there's such a, the way they are depicted, some might see as it's like a caricature of themselves.
Right.
Like,
that's what I mean.
Everybody, but to me, the reason that Joel and Ethan Coen are brilliant to me, and I'm a huge fan of Coen Brothers movies, is that they create incredibly multidimensional characters out of simple everyday people.
Yeah.
And that is what I see it. I see it as, I think the reason they went so far to really grab every stereotype from Minnesota, which they did. I mean, and I guess North Dakota, even though I spent my time in Minnesota, I've never been to North Dakota.
Yeah.
But it's a very similar kind of like a character of a person that they're depicting. I think the reason why they went so far with it is because underneath it, they created this web of complicated people. Like Marge, she's this sheriff, and she's so deep, and she's so actually like such a wonderful good person.
Yeah.
But also so resilient, but also sort of gullible, like with that scene with Mike Yamaguchi.
Oh, you know, yeah.
She has.
Well, that scene was very purposeful for me.
Yes.
And I.
To grow her character, don't you think?
I think it's bigger than that. And I'll we can talk about
okay,
that too.
Okay, sorry. I'm
That's another thing that I noticed. And this is why I love movies, guys. This is why I love movies, is I can watch a movie 10 times. And on the 10th watch, I see something I didn't see.
Right.
Now, maybe I'm just really slow.
You are really slow.
I'm really slow.
And when I say she's slow, I'm not saying she's stupid.
She
the
loves
word,
me. She loves
I
me. Do,
I really love you. But
it's okay.
The word slow has been synonymous with stupid, like sometimes, you know, in our culture. But when I say Tiffany is slow, I don't mean she's stupid. She's literally physically slow.
Okay.
She eats slow.
Okay. I'll do a damn luck count.
Sir, right now?
Yeah, right now. You're darn tootin'.
Why are you playing that part?
I just wanted to play it.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I thought it was going to be a different quote also, but that was fun.
No, you have to play Mike Yamaguchi.
Darn. I don't have that one.
Oh.
You know,
I like ya.
Finding and prepping for this show.
I like you so much.
You are good at that.
I am.
You did spend a good enough time. I picked the right movie.
Yeah.
I'll say that. Yeah, but maybe I can find another. Sorry to interrupt you. I'm so rude with my quote.
No, well, I was just busy talking about how you're slow.
I know, and look at me. I was like, I'm not that slow. Am I? I'm going to do something. Now I'm trying to find.
What are you trying to do?
I'm trying to continue. I'm trying to find a quote that is kind of going to show you another example of
no.
The
you
way
have to. You have to say. You
people
have to
speak the accent.
Okay, but we can get to that. I want you to tell me because I'm curious why you think the Mike Yamaguchi scene is such a scene of such depth.
Are we going to jump there?
I don't know. You said that you learned something new every time, so I'm curious.
I did. Well, because what I was really, you know, I was really paying attention, which maybe I don't sometimes.
No, and that's also true.
I was really paying attention, and there's a lot. God, I have so many notes here, just even from the beginning. But okay, let's jump to that scene. The reason I think that scene was important, and you did say that was a shift to her character.
Yeah.
Because I think the main character obviously is Marge.
Yeah.
We're with
for
her.
For sure.
She's the one we're with.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think up until that point, you're watching her do this police work. She's kind of doing a great job. She's just like, boom, 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 knocking it out. We don't know how quickly she's going to get to the point where she can find these guys, but we can see she's not having too many problems being like having trouble. She's not really having trouble yet.
No, she's moving fast.
She's just doing her job. She's get a lead. She's going to follow it. She talks to this person. She talks to that person. And she goes and talks to, previous to that scene, she goes and talks to Jerry at the dealership.
Yeah.
And she has that first interview with him where she just asks him some basic questions. He acts a little fishy like he does, but she doesn't get too involved in it.
No. She walks doesn't away. Have a reason to go deeper.
She there. Doesn't really think about it. She doesn't, that's it. So she leaves, and then after that scene is the scene with the
Mike
Asian
Yamaguchi,
guy.
Yeah.
Mike Yamaguchi.
Yeah.
And she realizes after that phone call the next morning with her friend that that guy was not honest.
Right.
And she realizes.
I see where you're going with this.
People might not be honest, or they might not be saying what is real.
Yeah.
That they actually can fool you. I was fooled by that guy.
Yeah.
Wow.
She was.
She was surprised. I'm a cop and this guy fooled me. And I think that was the reason for that scene, because then she goes back to talk to him again. Jerry, not,
I can see
not
that.
Mike.
I never thought of it that way.
And that happens,
that.
By the way, right after that scene. So you have to, and that's why I paid attention to it. She goes back to talk to him, and in that moment, she's like digging a little harder on him.
Yeah.
She's like, there was something weird about that guy. I need to go back and talk to him now. Because I know with script writing, and like I didn't do a lot of it in school, but they always say like most scenes in movies are purposeful. You wouldn't have a scene like that, because what was the I was kept thinking, like, what is the purpose of this scene then? Why is it in the story?
Of Mike, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's not going to cheat on her husband. We didn't think that.
No.
It, and then I thought, that's got to be it, because we needed a something for her to go, ha-ha.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, you're right.
A little bit, because it did push her to go
back
and talk to
him. It also gave
her
character just a little bit more texture. You know, that there was something other than police work.
And it also made us go, maybe she can be fooled.
Right.
You know, like, maybe she's not going to figure it out. Maybe this isn't going to get solved. I don't know. There's a lot. I could be reading too much into it. But
I like your police work there, Tiff.
Oh, you guys just wait. We're going to definitely read a scene. I'm going to do terrible and she's going to do good. So that was some of the things. Was there anything else that, like, do you find that when you watch a movie again, you find new things, or does that not happen for you?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You know what I think also, especially a movie that you love throughout the ages, who you are when you show up to that movie for a second or third time is a different person.
Yeah. I was talking about that with Donna.
Were
about
you?
Motherhood.
Oh, yeah.
We were saying you watch a movie as a kid about being a mom, and you're not a mom yet. So you see it differently. And now you see a movie about being a mom and you're like, oh, my God.
So that's exactly it. So, you know, I'm 47. You know, we have these kids, these five kids, and
true that.
I've lived through a lot of changes in the last several years of my life. And so I show up at this movie with different eyes. And so I'm trying to think of, like, if you're asking specifically what I experienced differently in Fargo. You know, I don't think I had any real revelations. I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was like guilty pleasure. Just like sitting and watching a really great movie. That's how it felt.
Yeah. It's a great movie. It's a really good movie.
Yeah.
Let's see if I have any other notes. I made quite a bit, actually. I love the details of how they show each character. And there's a lot of show don't tell with these guys.
Yes, which I love.
Like when they kidnap the wife and the second kidnapper, the guy with the blonde hair, what's his name? I forget his name.
I don't even know his name.
They have
just the awful guy.
The awful.
The scary,
the guy
dead
that
inside.
Doesn't talk barely
yes,
at all.
Yeah.
But he comes in the masks. They both do.
Yeah.
And then he hurts his finger and he just takes his mask off.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, he doesn't think she's in the bathroom.
I know, but I think the whole point of that was that this guy doesn't care.
I know. He's so in the moment of
himself. He really doesn't
care.
He's like, whatever. Like, he probably put the mask on because the other guy told him to. He just, that was my guess, because he really didn't seem to, it didn't seem to bother him.
And let's remember, he's also not just hurt, he's bitten. And that's why he's desperate to find the bacitracin, because she bit him.
That's right.
And he doesn't want her germs. So he's like weird.
He's like a
germaphobe. What he cares about, exactly.
I
what
know,
he cares
what
about
a
is
stupid
like
weirdo.
Like one thing where he's about to like kill someone, but he doesn't care about that. He cares about that there should be a little bacteria in his cut.
He's selfish.
Like desperately cares.
He's like
he's ripping through the medicine
shit.
Cabinet.
Yeah, and he continues to do that. So they do a good job of like showing you who someone is. Right away.
Yeah.
And he doesn't change. That guy stays the same throughout the whole story. And I had a few other really bizarre notes that I wrote down. Let's see. I like the scene where he is practicing what he's going to say on the phone.
Yes, that's a good
scene. And what's so cool about what they
did. When Jerry is.
Yes, when Jerry, sorry, thank you. When Jerry is practicing, now that he comes home and he realizes that they took his wife and he's got to make that fake phone call.
Yeah.
And so he's practicing. And what they do is they show him practicing, but then they cut before he makes the actual phone call.
Yes, they do.
That stuff is so great.
That this movie is, like, to me, genius beyond.
It is. And it's why it's such a, you know, it's such a great movie. I don't even know if it.
It won everything.
I can look and tell
you.
Well,
we looked. Frances McDormand definitely won Best Actress. I know that. I know that.
Fargo
won Best Picture.
All right. Tiffy, well, listen, I'm sorry, guys. I'm having some technology issues today, as I'm always having.
Let's just say it won Best Picture because I think
it did. It won two Oscars.
I know that she won Best Actress.
It won two Oscars. Best Actress.
And
Best Writing and Screenplay.
Oh, so it didn't win Best Picture.
It was nominated for all of the things, but it did not win.
Well, it won Best Picture in my heart.
Of course.
Yes.
Mine too. Absolutely. Anything else I should add? Well, let's see. I love, and I was making my own personal comparison to the movie Psycho, which I know you kind of watched some of it with me.
I rewatched
Psycho. I think the Coen brothers must be a fan of Hitchcock because they do like to... I find they do similar things. And one thing they did in this movie, which is awesome too, is it's all about the money, right?
Mm-hmm.
This movie, they have a lot of themes of money and greed in all of their movies.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but a lot of them. And, you know, all this is happening around the money and the Steve Buscemi character, I forget his name too. I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter.
He, you know, he ends up with the money. He ends up burying it in the snow.
Yeah.
Puts the ice scraper in the, as if that would help find anything.
Well,
I mean, unless it snows again and then you can't see
that's
it.
True.
It's ridiculous.
But
I mean, the whole thing is so funny.
It's something with that massive, like left and right. Remember the camera
pans? Yeah,
and
it shows you the desperation of this person who's like, he doesn't know what to do. You know, he's scrambling. He's like, I need to save the money.
He's been shot in the face.
He's been shot in the face, for God's sake. And, but the money gets put there and they don't ever resolve that.
No.
You never know if the money never gets found.
Well, I mean, yes, the money will be found by some stranger when
probably,
the snow melts.
Which is a whole other movie. Which is another movie. But it's like the money, it doesn't matter, you know. And in the movie Psycho, which I will talk about at some point on the show, if you've seen that movie, you know, our main character gets killed. The woman gets killed. And she is... also on the run with money that she's stolen.
Yeah.
And he kills her and then he cleans up the hotel room.
But he doesn't even care.
But he doesn't
the
see the money because she hid the money in a newspaper because she didn't want anybody to see it, left it on the counter next to the bed. And when he dumps her body, he puts it in the trunk and shoves it in the swamp. And when the cops come and everybody, no one can find the money. Nobody, the money isn't even, it doesn't matter.
It's
again,
like the greed's the motivator, but in the end, nobody even gets it, which is perfect.
It is perfect.
Which is the whole point it's meaningless what they're chasing.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really awesome. So I do love that. I do love that whole situation. Let's see. Do you have anything else before we can get into? Do you want to get into reading a scene?
Oh, okay. I was going to say don't move to silence yet.
No, we're not going to move to silence yet.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I just it's one of those things where there's so much to say. I just how about the theme of food? The theme of food in that movie. I can't deny it.
Yeah, explain. I want to know what you mean.
Well, first of all, Marge is pregnant.
Oh,
and
yes.
And the first scene of the first scene we meet Marge, it's like 4 a.m. and she has to go to work because there's been this triple homicide in Brainerd. And Norm is like, you got to eat a breakfast. And so it's like from the moment we realize that food's going to be a central theme and also that food really means love between the two of them. You know, then they go to that massive buffet, which always cracks me up when
so
they have like four. Really?
No, I'm being sarcastic.
Barf. But they have like four massive plates.
There's that too, by the way.
No, she doesn't barf.
She almost barfs.
But
I don't know if you guys know this, but Nicole really loves when people barf in movies.
It is astounding to me that if anyone is going to barf, and I don't care if it's a movie, if it's a TV show, if it's a commercial. Somehow, someone is going to barf in front of me every time
it's
I turn
crazy.
On the TV because
I
hate it that much. I
can't believe your luck around that.
I know.
It's almost, I laugh out. I literally laugh out loud because I can't handle it. But sorry, go ahead.
Anyway, so the theme of food in the movie to me cracks me up because the way, and it's also actually, okay, so this also goes into the authenticity of Minnesota. one of the things that I remember remarking upon when I moved from New York, which is like the fashion forward capital of the world. And not that I've ever been such a fashionista, but you know, whatever. I was a person in my 20s. I think I was 25. Mm-hmm. And when I moved, it was like you go to Minneapolis, and I'm not saying that anyone is like eating like a pig or anything, but I mean the difference.
What are you saying?
The difference in the stereotypical, you know, societal norm of what women do and what women are ashamed to do, which is eat a lot of food or eat certain kinds of food, especially in my 20s. It was the 90s. It was like we were coming off the 80s culture of like waif and like airbrushed everything and you have to look perfect. And I was a young person really indoctrinated into that in a very unhealthy way. Mm-hmm. And then you moved to Minnesota and you're like, you're sitting next to like some girl.
Yeah, it's meat and potatoes time.
Eating like a rack of ribs and three baked potatoes and like an ice cream soda. And I'm like, what's going on here? And so I do think the food, I just think if anyone's really like a fan of this movie, they'll know what I'm saying, which is the food is a really central theme.
It is. And it always happens around the two of them.
Yeah.
And also like the love of the two of them.
Yeah. It's a really lovely, actually.
It is lovely.
Theme
yeah.
of food and yeah. love. So needed
it's
to
beautiful.
Mention.
I mean, I think we all love those simple scenes. And it's like you said about the Coen brothers, like they don't say a lot, but when they do it, it's just enough.
On point.
It's on point. And then you've great actors, which make that happen for you because, you know, without her in that movie, I don't know what that movie would look like.
I'm a diehard Frances McDormand fan. Like she's fucking
awesome.
Love her. Everything she's in kills me.
She's
dead.
The best. Yeah. And she really is. Let me think. Is there anything else we should discuss? What do you guys think?
You can't
talked
ask
about
people
the Asian
on a podcast.
Guy. I know, but I think they want me to talk to them sometimes. I know you're out there. I know you're listening. What are you thinking? I don't think I have. I love the shots. I wrote one little note. The shots that they do, like the above shot of the parking lot.
Yeah.
When he's in the car in the parking lot. It's just there's like these beautiful visuals for me that are just so simple. And they do a lot of static camera, which is like film nerd stuff. But it's not like you have to move around a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you're just with these people. And that's a very Woody Allen move, too. It's not like very theatrical. It's just like you're in the scene with the people. They're having their moment. Cut. Next scene.
Yeah.
It's not sweeping movements and all this stuff. So I love that too. And remember, there were a few things where we were confused about. Like, did he put him in the trunk? And then
it's implied that he puts him in the trunk because all you see is him click the trunk and it opens up.
And the rest is up to us. All right.
I like
so
the rest
I
of
see you getting
us.
Excited. I see you walking, like, kind of like moving over to the walking. This is a giant room, guys.
She's lying.
She just walked across
right
the other the other side of the room. Okay, should we get into it?
Wait a sec. Okay, so this
you might need to take a minute.
Yeah, well, Tiff. So she just handed me this script. All right,
guys. So we're gonna have a little fun. We're gonna read a scene. I call this the cold read. Is what we're gonna call this part of the show.
Okay, and it's definitely a cold read because it's freaking cold in this scene.
It is cold in there in that scene, and we're gonna do just to give you a little fun, you know, experience here with me and Nicole. All right, so why don't we just do it?
Okay,
so you know what I'll do? I'm gonna do read the like I did with Donna. I'm gonna read the descriptions.
Is there a description? Oh right, okay.
And we're gonna start where it says I have a little line here by the wreck.
Oh, we're not gonna do that part?
Well, we can if you want. It just gets a little longer. You want to do the whole thing?
I want to do the whole thing.
All right, guys, we're just gonna go and do the whole thing. Okay. Yeah. So if I could add some amazing music later, I might, but we'll see. Maybe not.
Okay.
So I'm just going to start from the...
But you should say to the people listening what we're looking at when we start the scene. Like, what happened? Don't you think, or no?
Well...
Or you just want to jump right in?
That's why I was going to start with... No, I think we should just go. Because
okay.
Because do you want to add? Do you know?
I just... Of course I know. I've
you're like a book.
Well, I am. I mean, just
she's like a computer. She just
it's
records
not even
everything.
A joke. I have this weird gift where I have a photographic memory of experiences, not of reading things. But I remember exactly. So what's happening when we're moving into the scene is that there's been a triple homicide, which we just saw the actual we as viewers saw the triple homicide happen.
That's right.
Which is incredibly disturbing. And this is the next morning where Marge and her her deputy Lou know nothing of the matter except for the evidence of it, which is the dead bodies on the road and the car wreck. And so we're we're entering into the scene where Marge is going to, you know, approach Lou and they're going to check it out. They're going to try to figure out what happened.
They're just on the scene.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to, you want to go?
Well, okay. Hold on. The reverse shows Marge approaching. Okay. So, hiya, Lou.
Margie, thought you might need a little warm up. He hands her one of the cups of coffee.
Yeah, thanks a bunch. So what's the deal now? Gary says triple homicide.
Yeah, looks pretty bad. Two of more over there. Marge looks around as they start walking.
Where is everybody?
Well, it's cold, Margie. By the wreck. Laid out in the early morning light is the wrecked car, a pair of footprints leading out to a man in a bright orange parka face down in the blood-stained snow, and one pair of footsteps leading back to the road. Marge is peering into the car.
Oh, geez. Here's the second one. It's in the head and the hand there. I guess that's a defensive wound. Okay.
Marge looks up from the car.
Where's the state trooper?
Lou, up on the shoulder, jerks his thumb. Back there a good piece, in the ditch next to his prowler. Marge looks around at the road.
Okay. So we got a state trooper pull someone over. We got a shooting, and these folks drive by. We got a high-speed pursuit, ends here, and this execution-type deal.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised if our suspect was from Brainerd.
Yeah? Marge is studying the ground.
I'm laughing because when Lou goes, yeah, know, he does it for like five syllables. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I'll tell you what, from his footprints, he looks like a big fella.
Marge suddenly doubles over, putting her head between her knees down near the snow. You see something down there, Chief?
I just think I'm gonna barf.
Jeez, you okay, Margie?
Oh, I'm fine. It's just morning sickness.
She gets up, sweeping snow from her knees.
Well, that passed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm hungry again.
You had breakfast yet, Margie?
Oh, yeah. Norm made some eggs.
Yeah? Well, what now, do you think?
Let's go take a look at that state trooper. I think that's enough, Tiff.
It could be. Yeah, we could stop there.
I think that's good. You know what's really funny is doing the accent. I love it.
Yeah, and you know, listen, this is just fun. But it's fun. This is like why I love movies, you know? And I've read a lot of scripts just for fun sometimes when I went back in the film school days. All right, well, listen, I think we did a pretty good job on that one.
Yeah. I mean, Fargo is, to me, I've seen Fargo, and I will tell just a quick story, is that I moved to Minnesota very, very soon after this came out, and I found myself in the situation where I was really just in the world, a very different world than New York, being in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and I don't know, something about having seen Fargo, believe it or not, like, this is like a real, like a not a joke thing. I think it made my transition easier to the Midwest.
Like, that's awesome.
I just felt more comfortable with the people, and I felt like I didn't feel punked. Okay, like, it's so different living in Minnesota than it is living in New York. You literally, you could feel punked. You can feel like people are making fun of me because it's such a genuine culture. Like, when they say Minnesota nice, these people are not fucking around. They are nice. They are patient. I have one little joke that when they do merge on a highway and like, so there's like construction and it says like in 2 miles, the right lane is going to be closed. Those flipping people in Minnesota, they line up for 2 miles and I would ride that road.
And the New Yorker comes
in. Yeah. And I would ride that thing and I would look at them astounded as they're all there sitting in the line, you know, stopped. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And at first I was like, am I confused? And I'm like, no, the other lane is open. For 2 miles, you can ride it. And I, of course, would ride it and merge right in because I'm an asshole. But, you know, that is...
Oh, you know, different place.
Different strokes for different folks.
Different strokes for different folks.
My stroke is
being
an asshole.
Well, you know, then that goes back to my first statement about did this upset people? Did it make a comical, you know, portrayal of people that live in North Dakota and those places? But for you, maybe not, because actually... It gave you a great warm welcome into what this place is going to be for you. And so maybe we shouldn't think of it that way.
And also, like, I'm from New York. Okay. I'm like a New Yorker, like diehard in terms of my identity. And so when people make a good film that depicts New Yorkers, I like that. I like that. I don't feel offended. Yeah, it's stereotypical. And it's a caricature of itself. But like, who cares? Like, I love New York. So I feel like the people who really love Minnesota probably wouldn't be offended, I think. But I could be wrong.
Probably not. And I will say the coolest thing, the craziest thing about that movie still is I had to keep reminding myself, this is a real story.
I know. It's bizarre.
It's crazy. It is so crazy. And I cannot believe that that actually happened. All of it. I mean, all of it. But well, let's move on because obviously I could talk about this for a long time. Let's just give a little, we're going to end it on a little note, just a little fun. Let's see here.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Oh, you betcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that, so we weren't messing around.
That is a good one. That is a good one. Okay. All right. So now we'll move on to Silence of the Lambs. Which we all, my God, we all know this movie so well. It's like I shouldn't even, I don't have to say anything. I just say the title and everyone goes, blah.
Shout out to Steve.
Shout out to Steve.
If Steve is listening.
Steve, are you with us?
Steve, you're with us.
My buddy
spirit.
Steve. I you know, to share a little more about me, I spent a couple years between like, I think like 17, 18, I worked at a movie theater in Glen Burnie in the mall. I forget what the my God, I've lost my mind.
You can't remember the name of
the
theater? The
name of the mall.
The Glen Burnie Mall.
It wasn't
just
even
kidding.
Glen Burnie. It was like the mall around that area.
Okay, whatever. Whoever's from there,
Steve,
is like screaming
please,
into their
please help me.
Radio.
Anyway, he was like the manager, like the assistant manager, and he wasn't even older than us, but like maybe a few years. And so I worked for a while with a bunch of people my age, you know, in that time in the 90s. Actually, what was it? The late 80s, mm-hmm. early 90s. And this definitely was one of those movies. Man, just Silence. Okay, so let's get into Silence. I don't know. What do you have to say about your experience with that movie?
Even though we say that we're not going to talk about, so once again, we did watch this movie again together. So
yeah,
part of our prep
idea.
For the podcast is we watch both of the movies. And when we were watching Silence of the Lambs, it was the same thing. She's like, don't talk about it. But the one thing that you did say, and I think the reason that the answer to your question, what that movie really meant to me, is just the strong female lead.
Loving
her being young and freaking like scared, but being given all this responsibility and being such a badass. I love that.
Yeah. And I was saying, I didn't think there'd be too many common themes with these two mm-hmm. movies, but actually they're both about solving murders mm-hmm. and they're both strong female leads.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was that common back then.
Yeah.
True. You know, and now we see so many shows, like we were just watching this great series on Netflix called Unbelievable.
Yeah, that one's good.
And two amazing female leads. I mean, I'm just loving this time that we get to see all these amazing women actors get to play these roles. And this was the beginning of that, I think. These mm-hmm. were some of the first times that you saw, especially Silence, the way they show her, even awesome. From the beginning of that movie, just the opening scenes where they're just like putting you in the place of her being at the academy and in Quantico, right?
Yeah.
And she is just surrounded by men.
Yeah.
So much taller than her, and she's just little tiny
and she's
thing.
So small, and she's such a badass. And that scene, like we just remarked, where she gets into the elevator to go see what's his name,
Crawford
for the first time.
Yes.
And she like gets in, turns around, and it's her and all men like a foot and a half taller than her, and they're all wearing the same thing and she's wearing something different. It's so symbolic.
It's so awesome. Yeah. And that's got to be Demi, you know what I mean, like the director. So let me give you the details of Silence of the Lambs for those that are listening. So this movie was 91, so this was the year I graduated high school, because it's all about me.
It can be, you're the host.
It can be. And it is directed by Jonathan Demme. It was written, the script was written by Ted Talley, and the book was Thomas Harris, and he wrote a few, I think, you know, there's Red Dragon, and then mm-hmm. there's the book after that. Starring Jodie Foster, of course, Anthony Hopkins, and...
And they both won Academy Awards, and the
and
movie won.
And this movie killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is a big... The awards that this movie won, it won 5 Oscars, and it was a very big deal, because I was... listening to something else about this movie, I don't know when, but it was like the first thriller type of movie to win Academy Awards.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because usually it's like dramas and things like that, but this was like almost considered like a horror movie. And for it to be that...
Like almost. It's a horror movie.
I mean, it kind of is.
I'm really,
But it kind of went. And remember I was telling you, just for people that heard me talk on the other podcast about that other podcast called Inside Psycho, Inside the Exorcist, I had listened to, and I shared this on the other episode, that The Exorcist was up for a bunch of Academy Awards, and it didn't win anything. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of drama around that, but some people think that it was because it was just too much of a horror film that they didn't want to give it to anybody. Yeah. But it was a great movie. But so this movie did win. Many, many years later, that movie was like much older. And it won Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Director, Best Screenplay.
Wow.
So it won it five so of good. Those. So good.
Yeah.
And it really is. Like, you can't argue with that. You know, you watch it and you go, man, that was a good movie.
Yeah.
And we still know all the lines.
Yeah.
Everybody. It's like one of those things. You could run into a random person our age and they'd be like, the lotion in the basket, you know, like you can't, which it's just gross, but I mean all of it, but like
it's definitely
but
gross.
This is what it is. So I don't know, what do you want to, any first takes on shares on that movie before I get into my stuff?
Ask me questions. I don't know,
ask you questions.
I mean, you're the host, Tiffany.
Did you okay host I'll get me. Into the we'll get into the women stuff. We're women, we're coming from the women perspective. Did it impact you to see a movie with a woman that's a strong female lead playing such a strong, such a tough role of like being in the FBI and having to face all these challenges? I loved that.
I literally think it changed my life.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I think that was a very empowering story for women to watch, especially at my age, to say like, fuck that. Women can do that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I might even want to do that. You know, I would never have done that then. That wasn't my path, but it's very appealing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. I would say that, you know, as people, I won't just say as women, because I think this applies to men too, but as people, you don't realize what influences shape you. You're young and you're just growing. And like, that's why I think there's been such a push to put stronger female leads, even as young as like young children's programming, because you don't know what influences people. Sometimes it's passive things that you just see and you don't realize that it has an impact on you. But if I'm to look back on some of the experiences in my life, I think that movies like Silence of the Lambs and characters like Jodie Foster's character, Clarice Starling. I think
I really wish really you could do that accent. I can't do it, man.
I can't do it at all. Clarice, I can do Fargo.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Mr. Lecter.
It's a hard one. Southern.
It's West Virginia.
It's West Virginia.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Yes, it is.
But anyway, so I would say definitely that had an influence on me.
Yeah, and Jodie Foster, I mean, she really, you know, she really did an amazing job with that movie. I'll go into it. So from a camera person perspective, because I'm a photographer, right off the bat, everybody talked about this, was the way that he decided to shoot this movie, which was straight into the camera. So all of the people are talking straight at you. It basically, we're Jodie Foster, we're Clarice, and all the characters are not just you're not watching them speak to each other. They are talking
to you.
You are her from the moment this thing begins. Very first scene with Crawford in the office, he's looking right at us. He's talking to us. And that was a huge decision and a huge, it's a huge part of this movie to this day.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think I've seen many movies that even do that as much. They might do it in parts, but I can't say, I don't know. I would love to hear
if
people
can.
It's
hard to pay. You have to pay attention to it to really recognize it. And I think if somebody's watching, if someone's listening to this podcast and they go back and rewatch Silence of the Lambs, you're going to notice it a lot more, that all the characters, down to like the bug guy who's asking her out, they have them look straight into the camera. It's really cool.
It's really cool. And it really makes you sympathize with her and her and her plight and all of the things that she has to now do.
Yeah.
So it was a really smart choice. And I to this day, I love that so much. So I'm trying to think, what were my other, I have such funny little notes I wrote down. The jail, when they go first, when she goes down to see Hannibal for the first time.
Yeah.
And listen, it's a movie. It's a movie, so it looks like a freaking dungeon.
It does.
I'm thinking to myself, is that real? Like, in real life, would that be a jail? It's really extreme.
I don't know. I mean, jails that haven't been renovated in some parts of the country may still look like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's fine. It's a movie, so we have to go with it. And also, to see, like, the other cellmates next to him are, like, kind of in this grungy situation, and then you come upon Hannibal's cell.
I know.
And he's in this like very pristine, he does have the spa. He's got like a glass.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's just, everything about him is so OCD, right? Like, he's just completely tucked in and tight and standing so straight, and his hair slicked back, and he just looks like, which was so purposeful. He looks like somebody who doesn't look like they're in a jail cell.
Right.
Like, at all, you know, and that's our first impression of him. So that was something I also wrote down. One thing I also noticed, just being a person of the 90s, is microfiche.
Oh, yeah, you like the microfiche.
I just thought that was so interesting. Like, we can't, you know, you can't, that's the only way to research things.
Back then, yeah.
Back then.
Yeah.
You can't just, like, pick microfiche. Up your...
It's so dizzying to have to freaking really deal annoying. With it.
Did you do it a lot?
Yeah, well, because I had to study, you know.
You did?
I got my master's degree.
I just remember, like, books, like encyclopedias and, like, sorting through that. I'm trying to think how many times I had to go through a microfiche.
I mean, not often, but any time I had to use it, I just have a terrible memory of it. Like, it's really hard to get it to move slowly. So you yes. touch that thing and it goes whoosh. And
so
it makes
annoying.
You like you're going to pass out. And then, of course, you have to go back really slowly. And then you have to maximize it. What would you call that then? Magnetize it. Like now you would
you
just
have
maximize
to,
it.
We
yeah.
would zoom it with our
zoom
fingers.
It. Exactly.
We'd be like boop and just spread our fingers. Yeah. All right. So this is just stupid details that I wrote down that have nothing to do with the story. But okay, let's get into the story real quick. So first thing is, you know, we've got Clarice and she's kind of alone. And one thing that I thought was interesting that we had talked about a little bit when we were watching it is that this Hannibal Lecter character is a messed up guy. He's a bit of a monster, as they call him.
A bit.
A monster.
He eats people's faces. Yeah, it's not
good.
I
mean, how can you be buddies with this guy? But they do become buddies. And actually, what's odd is you're kind of like, you oddly are rooting for him by the end of this
I
movie.
I know. It's, which is why it's
which
brilliant.
That's what I was just going to say. It's brilliant because you shouldn't be, and you know you shouldn't be, but she's kind of alone in this thing. She's got Crawford, who's, you know, obviously like bringing her along, and he's mentoring her, and they have an interesting relationship too, but he's really helping her, okay? And he's helping her in more ways than one. He's helping her with the case and with her becoming successful, and he's helping her look at herself.
He really is.
He's really doing
he's
a shrink
like a
job on
he's
her.
He's a decent psychiatrist.
I mean, coming from your perspective as a shrink, he really is. And it's a little twisted, but...
But I also want to say that I think part of the reason you're rooting for him is they make all the characters around him so egregious.
They
like
do.
Like Dr. Chilton, who is the guy at the very
that poor
end.
Actor.
He's such a disgusting...
He's so good, though.
He's so deplorable. And he does such an excellent job of being so deplorable that you honestly... are okay, at least I was honestly okay if Hannibal killed
him. I know
and
you're
ate
like
him.
Fine,
I was
you're like
fine,
good,
go for it.
Please eat his face,
yeah,
he's
right?
annoying,
he deserves it.
Want him to die right now,
for sure.
Well, he's slimy,
he's
you
disgusting.
Know? He's
I just
how much do you love him?
And you know, talking about your like camera thing about him looking into the camera, that scene where he looks into the camera and he's like licking his teeth.
Oh, god,
he's disgusting,
yeah. And I love how they do the little I always call it the plant and payoff. This is like a thing from film school. They're always going to show you something that seems really unimportant in a movie. If they do that, notice it. It's always
like
something.
Pen.
It's the pen.
You're thinking of the
and
pen.
And every time I notice something like that in a movie, I'm like, they just keep show him eating this pen and playing around with it. That thing is going to be important later. And man, was it important later. So later that pen is what ends up being his, you know,
everything.
Downfall.
Yeah.
The fact that he just got so comfortable with it and would leave it places. And I love when they do those little touches in a movie, which is just great. First of all, he's like not only is Hannibal like an amazing therapist, as you would say, and a little bit of he doesn't come off as douchey, though, even though he says things to her that are kind of upsetting. We don't take it as like he's being a perv.
No,
he's very,
he's like respectful.
He's like respectful, and this whole thing is so weird.
But that's why it won. Not only Best Picture, Best Actor and Best Screenplay, because it took Anthony Hopkins to act it and it took someone to write that character. And it all mattered for it to be that good.
This is true.
Look at my deep knowing of movies.
This is why I'm glad that you're on so we can do this.
Because I'm so smart.
Honey, you're so smart. She really is. You're a smart lady. I definitely can't like edit a paper or write anything. So,
but look, you do this though.
But I'm doing this. Okay. So anyway, what was I going to say about that? Lost my train
of thought. The plan payoff and the pen and the Chilton.
Being a perv.
Right. Yeah. That he's like actually a respectful in a weird way.
Yeah.
You can
in
like
a very
have
weird way.
From him.
I don't know why. It's like they're able to do that.
We'll talk
somehow.
About a multidimensional character.
But then he's totally nasty to the mother.
What mother? What are you talking about?
The mother of the, you know, our girl. The girl that gets kidnapped.
Well, yeah, that but that's why he's multidimensional. Because when you see him in the airport airline hangar or whatever they call that, with the senator, you see that like it's actually that's a great point. In that moment when he's so disgusting and so horrible to her, you're like, oh yeah, we hate him.
Yeah, you're like he's fucked up.
You remember that he's a serial killer who eats people. You're like, oh shit, okay, fine. He's not like a good guy who's interesting. He's like a disgusting, deplorable. So that's why he's multidimensional.
He is. Oh, awesome. And now this is what I was. Sorry, I just remembered it. It's like a little funny though. Like it's like he's a superhero. Like he can like kill the guy next to him just by talking to him.
I know. That I mean, part
that
was
a little
rough.
Bit crazy. Like
he
you know,
swallowed his tongue. What the
yeah,
hell?
How you do can't you do that to a human being? Just by. I mean, that's.
But
listen,
can anyone swallow their tongue?
I don't know how you can do that with words. First
how
of all,
how can you do that with anything?
I don't really understand. So he somehow can do that, and I he guess. Can also break out of anything with like. A piece a of a pen, yeah. Which is crazy. But well, I also
picked,
had some jokes.
His,
and
he
I,
picked his handcuffs, but he I picked his also it's so, like impossible.
Well, he's like also a magician. He can do anything. And the speed in which he can do it. Like, he's in that scene at the end where they've got him in the transitional jail, which is, you know, obviously they did that to make
the
it
the birdcage in the middle
the
of a room.
The birdcage jail.
Yeah.
But they still made the point to let it look all beautiful and nice as
and
if he's
classical
in
music.
Europe. Yeah, he's in Europe. He's got like a desk and a...
He's got his little potty with like the fan around it. What's those things? Like a screen? He's got his little potty with the screen.
Anything that Hannibal wants, Hannibal gets. Yeah, it's like everyone's telling
like
how...
How they get plumbing for that toilet? Like, what is that?
They just... Whatever he needs because Toddler he toilet. Can do anything. But yeah, and he's able to like get, you know... Managed to get that. That actually is a very cool scene, even though it's really graphic and really violent.
Yes.
Where he gets the cop and he just bashes him and then it's like over. But he is able to skin people and hang them up in the freaking.
Well, let's talk about that. What do you skin them with, the pen?
What do you do? Really, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, no. He got the shit off the cops. Like, the cop might have had.
But even still, he's like, he's so fast. He can do that and like hang a person up and. The rafters.
I know, with that like that butterfly looking stance.
I'm thinking
which is
like,
also symbolic.
No, and he's also look at his art. It's amazing. He can put a person up in the. It's mixed media.
Hey,
it's
listen,
really good.
I want to hang out with him. All right, let's admit it. I want to know him.
I wanted to go to Italy with him really bad. That's why I was excited for the next movie. Although I was a little, I will say, I was pissed that Jodie Foster didn't come back, and I think that pissed everyone off. What else can we say, Nicole, about this movie?
I don't know.
What about, let's talk about the actual Buffalo Bill character.
Oh,
real quick.
Yeah. You know the line that comes up every time I think of him, which I don't want to say.
Why can't you say it?
It's too gross. You say it.
What is it?
When he's in the mirror.
Oh, my God. That's like Steve. Steve, it's your line.
It's his favorite line.
He loves that scene, and I just don't understand.
I don't know. Maybe one day you'll get Steve to drive down from Annapolis.
The F me part?
Yeah.
Look at you. I didn't even know you liked that scene.
I don't like that scene. I just, when I think of that character, that's the scene I think about where he's like tucking his business behind his situation and he's dancing to that music.
But you know what? And this is another thing I wanted to say. And this is the thing about homosexuality, which is, do you think that they were, that the times were a bit dissing like people that wanted to be transgender?
Yes.
I think that was really kind of upsetting. It's like, listen, we get it. He's a sick, twisted, he's a murderer, he's a serial killer. But if it's, there was a part of that that felt a little bit like to make
derogatory.
So much fun of somebody who might dance in the mirror that way.
Yeah.
Forget that he's killing people, that he would want to just like put on makeup and put on a wig and dress like a lady and do that. Everybody, you know, at the time, I'm sure all my teenage boyfriends would be laughing their asses off. And to this day, they're still making fun of it. And actually, that's like really not okay.
Yeah,
that would not fly today.
I don't think
in a
that
movie.
Would fly today, and I think that it was too derogatory, and I would agree with that. Yeah.
All right, so I got a couple quotes. Let's play some. Let's
do
see
it.
What we got. Yeah,
do
let's
it.
Just see
Go
what they come
it.
Out like. All right, let's try this one. I don't even know what they are.
If you didn't kill him, then who did, sir?
Who can say? Best thing for him, really. His therapy was going nowhere.
You know all the quotes.
I do.
It's a good one. Yeah, so, I mean, he's comical. He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
He's a little bit funny. And then I, you know, this one, I'll just play this one.
He's in his 30s or 40s. He's got real physical strength combined with an older man's self-control. He's cautious, precise. See, he's in his
30s or 40s. Oh, it's rotating.
It's looping.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to say something else about women and about how we remember movies. I looked up both of these amazing movies for sound bites, and I had the hardest time finding quotes for the actual women roles.
You mean like recorded quotes?
Recorded quotes, like people wanted, like if I look up Silence of the Lambs, the quotes that I found were all of Hannibal Lecter.
Mm-hmm.
I could barely find a quote where Clarice was speaking.
Yeah.
And kind of the same thing for Fargo. It
All
you these
didn't
lines.
Get Frances McDormand?
It was really hard to find specific quotes of them. That's why I don't even have them. Because
right.
I really, and I, you guys, I tried. I really try. But I'm kind of like, what's that about? Like, and there were a lot of quotes of him just saying all these stupid things, you know, Hannibal Lecter, not stupid, but, you know, the typical things. I guess those are the most popular lines
exactly.
from the movie. But I think she's got great lines in that movie.
Yeah.
You know, and, I need to share one. I know we're getting long. This is kind of getting long, probably. I just need to talk about a few scenes going back to your point of how they are constantly showing you that she's in this very male world.
Yeah.
And, you know, she goes and they do the, not the autopsy, but what do you call that?
Yeah, it's the autopsy. Well, it's for the coroner, but it's the autopsy.
It's like where they go and
they're
look
evaluating
at
the body.
Yeah, they're doing like forensics.
Maybe it's not the autopsy because they're not like cutting in.
I mean, we watch so much SVU. How do we not know what the hell that person's?
She's the coroner.
She's the coroner, but they go in and they do their little.
She's the M. What do they call? You're talking about the woman who needs a sandwich, right?
No one knows what we're talking about.
All right, sorry. Well, that's a podcast for another time. Maybe one time instead of doing movies,
we'll do
SVU.
Oh yeah, we're gonna do. I'm definitely gonna
delve deep.
No, we're
into
gonna get,
SVU.
We are gonna get into that for sure.
But I think she's the medical examiner. They call her the Emmy.
Yeah,
they
but she goes through with her take on it.
Yes.
So it takes like a few people in the room, and that's also one of my favorite scenes. One thing I love about both these movies, just to do a quick comparison, is the way they use music, which is not so over the top. Sometimes you watch a movie and there's like so much dramatic music happening through
it's
every
annoying.
Scene. And it's kind of like, is that necessary? Do I need that? And what's great about this movie specifically and some of these great scenes, especially that one where they go in and it's like, I was confused too. Is that a funeral home? I don't know what that place is.
It had to be a funeral home, but it made no sense they were doing it there. But that's just my opinion.
It's one of those things, but surrounded by men. It's like 100 cops in there and she's got to somehow be like, all right, guys, we're going to take care of her now. Thank you very much. Did a good job.
Get out.
Let us do our job. So she does that.
But that was a very female moment of her.
Right.
A kind and caring.
Yes.
And more like stereotypical. Yes. Like, we're going to now, like, they, I will say, if you're going to go with a sort of a societal commentary perspective, they make those cops look like assholes. Because
they
look
really
vacant.
Do.
They're all drinking coffee. They look, there's a lot of them, so it's almost like they're just, they kind of look like a herd of animals.
Yeah, it's like
standing
you can't
there.
Even pick one out of the crowd. They're all the same.
No, they look, and it's obviously intentional.
Yes.
And so when she says that line, it's trying to contrast her behavior from theirs,
It's a great moment. Mm-hmm. And then they do that whole scene where it's quiet, but all you hear is that, like,
the
like
clicking
sound
of the camera.
Of the camera.
Nice sound effect there, too.
I try, man. You know, like whatever that sound was. I'm going to do it. No, I won't do it again. But you get the feel of the room. They put that stuff under their nose right away. You're getting a sense.
Smelling
it
salts.
Stinks in there. It's got to be so
gross.
Bad. And the way that she is kind of quietly recording what she sees, but she's also a little shaky in her voice. Like, you get to see that this is not an easy thing to do. And it's probably the first time she's had to do it. And man, she's just so good. That's what I'm saying. Like, she's so good because she can do that in such a subtle way. But I think the sound plays a really big part of that. Is instead of trying to like bring drama into the moment by adding all this music to make us feel it, it's like just be with these people in this quiet. It's quiet. And I think quiet sometimes is more unsettling.
Totally.
Than
it's
if you were to fill it with something.
Yeah.
And so, and when they do that in movies, I think it's so effective. And so to me, that was like a really, I love that scene a lot. I that's one of my most memorable scenes for me.
And it also it really evolves her character, her role in that scene.
Yeah.
And Crawford's confidence in her to let her be the one to call that out.
Yeah. And then she kind of gives it to him in the car afterwards, which is a great moment too.
Oh, and she says, don't disrespect her in front of the men. Yeah.
She's like, you don't need to do that. You know, like, didn't, what exactly did she say?
Well, what happened was when he wanted to get rid of the sheriff, he implied that he didn't want to discuss the case in front of her because she was a woman, like too delicate
like
to hear the details.
Like he was taking care of her.
Yeah. And she said, and he said, I'm sorry I had to do that. You know, it wasn't about you. I just wanted to get rid of him. And she said, it matters, sir. It matters.
Yes.
Yeah. Fucking A.
Feminism.
Go Jodie Foster. Kill
it. Yeah, and this is paving the way. I mean, it's like, listen, we don't need to be taken care of. And it does. We don't need to be taken care of. And like, let me do it. You know, if you're going to let me do it, let me do it.
Yeah.
And he's such a great, you know, the fact that he can take that in and be like, point taken.
Yeah, he was a great character too. I really liked his character.
He's great. And so he just, you know, he plays that role for her. It's also a bit of a father figure since she doesn't have one anymore.
For sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the point of him. But,
and he sounded like Marge. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, like, I know people love the lamb screaming and that whole. I think that's important. But I just love this these, like, little the scenes that are like the one I just told you, which is the scene where she has to get this guy in the end. The whole scene where they do the parallel editing trick where you think you're
it's scary as
the
hell.
Cops are with, you know, and then she pops in on the guy and she just is making like a, you know.
And can I say something else? Which we didn't rewatch the end, but I remember this really well.
We need to watch the end again.
When they're doing that parallel editing scene and Crawford realizes that she is not where she's supposed to be, do you remember what he calls her?
No, I don't remember.
He doesn't say Starling. He says Clarice.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think it's so beautiful because in that moment, she's not this like, you know, punk kid who he's teaching. He's like, she's a human being.
Yeah, she's come. I have chills. Come full circle.
I love it.
Oh my God, it's so good. Yeah. And then she has to go into that situation. That is the.
Let's watch the end later tonight.
Yeah, and it's a scary scene because you wreck. And the way she realizes it, when she's like, "Do you have a phone I can use?" Or she says, "Can I make a quick phone call?"
She sees the moth. The moth.
Just she realizes it, and that's how she gets in. And then the second she says that, they have an exchange in the kitchen or whatever that area is.
And it is exactly like Fargo Tiff. Because at the end, she's alone. Remember, it's like at the end
right.
when Marge
and I was
got
thinking,
the
that's
gun.
That's right. And I'm and thinking the same thing. She's going to walk up on the situation pregnant.
By herself.
By herself. But these are two.
Look at that. We picked two movies that are so parallel.
Bam,
and
people.
We didn't even realize.
Right out of the park.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they both are just completely brave in those moments. And instead of, like, turning around and calling for help, they're like, no, fuck this. I'm doing this
right
here. Now.
There's no other choice.
No.
Got to do it.
And it's actually more scary with Fargo because the whole time we were watching that, I'm like, she's pregnant.
Are you insane?
Like, what
Wait
is
a second.
Going on?
I don't agree with your police work there, Lou. You are telling me that you think the end of Fargo is more scary than the end of Silence of the Lambs?
No, well, I mean, like, for the character in the moment.
No.
They both don't know what they're about to encounter.
I still disagree.
They just don't. And like, it's
in the dark with the night vision glasses.
I just
glasses.
Think when you're pregnant, you're less capable to handle something.
I guess, but I still think the end of Silence
kills it.
You're
so vulnerable.
The end of Silence to me is a grillion times scarier than any end of any movie. When she's in the we didn't rewatch that part, but you know when she's in the basement with the night vision goggles.
I know the night vision is amazing too.
Yeah.
The way they and then they flip the perspective. And that's such a cool part too because now we're with him.
Yeah.
Suddenly you're with her the whole time and then the second that scene happens, we're looking through his eyes and we get to see her so vulnerable and so like you know, like she's just, it's just a scary scene because you can't imagine she's going to get out of it alive. You know, it's like, how is she going to make it through this? This is not simple.
And then we got the American girl at the bottom of the well being like, you fucking bitch.
Fucking
don't
love
leave
that
me.
Girl. And we just saw, you know, we were watching just a plug for this other show, Unbelievable on Netflix. Amazing show. You guys have to see it with Toni Collette.
So good.
So this same actress, the one that was the kidnapped girl, is in that series.
She's the therapist.
And
yeah.
she's awesome. And she didn't even age.
She gets,
she looks
no,
the same.
She looks great.
Looks amazing.
So I shout out her. To you, American Girl actress.
I need to know her name. I'm so sorry.
But you look great.
She does look great. Are we getting long? Is this getting long?
Yeah, and I have to pee.
All right. I could pause it, but you know what? You know, listen, maybe we'll revisit this. Maybe I'll do a true crime segue one time. There were a lot of things that, for me personally, watching all the true crime stuff that I watch, I knew they pulled some Ted Bundy stuff and to add to the realness of this.
You could have Maggie on.
Me and Maggie.
You should
will,
have Maggie
we might
on and
have
discuss
to do a
true
double,
crime.
Yes, and we could do some movies that show.
Aspects of
yes,
this.
Yes, that's a great idea. All right, guys. Well, listen, if you liked what we talked about today, please like, subscribe. Follow me on all the social media, Instagram, Facebook, all the things. Message me. Tell me what you want to see. If you want to be on the show, let me know what you want to come be in the hot seat with me.
This is like, I just want to say, a lifelong dream of Tiffany's to host a podcast.
She
wanted to for so long, and I'm so thrilled for her that she's getting to do it. Babe, you're doing a good job.
Thank you. You're welcome. Make it a lot of fun. So I am. I'm really enjoying it. And I also want to give a shout out to all the other shows on the Rehoboth Social Podcast Network. We've got What's Happening, Planet Earth, What's Happening with Brian. We've got Anonymous, Broken Stoked with Tom and Carlos. And, of course, Rehoboth Social, where we just, I think Rehoboth Social is like an interview local guests about businesses and things like that. So hopefully we'll be adding more, but this is definitely a great format, and we're really excited to bring you all these shows. Yes.
Can I plug myself?
Oh my God, please. To all of the three listeners out there,
for the millions, I mean the droves of listeners, which you know, I'll be in the archive. I also have a podcast. I do.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's going pretty well. So my name is Nicole Sachs, and I have a podcast called The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs, LCSW. If you're in any pain, if you're suffering from any symptoms or syndromes or anything that you think is chronic and you have resigned yourself that you cannot fix it, migraines, fibromyalgia, back, neck, shoulder, knee, hip pain, what have you, irritable bowel disease, skin disorders, pelvic pain, hop on over to my podcast and take a listen. I'm helping people a lot.
You are helping people a lot.
I sure am.
You're amazing.
And I also just need to say before we finish.
What?
That you and I sitting here with these soft voices on the mics.
Oh my God.
It's like the sweaty ball scene in Saturday Night Live.
It's a little bit like that.
Yes.
It is. Do you think this might happen?
People will say we're in love.
Awesome. Great way to end the podcast.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next time on The Film Effect.